Hi, my name is Brett. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Brett.
My sobriety date is February 27th of 2006. I do have a sponsor, and I actually don't have a home group yet. I just moved to Florida. I'm in Sarasota, but it's good to be up here. I know a lot of you guys have come up. I moved from D.C., and I met a lot of you guys, and I've heard a lot about this group, so it's good to finally be here. I relate to Sam. I'm feeling pretty nervous right now. I got asked about 5 minutes before the meeting started to speak, and somebody asked me how much time I had, and I said, I just got 6 years, and he said, oh, I was going to ask you to speak, but you actually have too long. And then Lloyd, thank God, said, oh, it's fine, he can speak. So thanks, Lloyd, I appreciate that. I'm really grateful to be sober. You know, if you're new tonight and you're wondering what this is all about, or you're looking around and judging people, or you just feel like, this is so lame, I just want to go get drunk. I relate a lot to that, and I did not really like Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new. I hated it. It was really uncomfortable. You know, I got out of I guess I was in rehab for 26 months, right, in this wilderness program. And I got out, and I was in there with, like, 10 guys, right? So that wasn't very fun. And I get out of this, like, lockdown wilderness program, and I came to AA because that's what everyone told me I should do. And they pretty much convinced me I was an alcoholic in there. And I went to my home group, which is called Midtown in D.C., and it's, like, 500 young people who are all extremely happy to see you, and I was scared shitless, you know what I mean? And I did not want to talk to these people, and I just wanted to go home and watch some Blockbuster, you know what I mean? And just relax, you know what I mean? But, you know, they scooped me up, and you know, they took me to meetings every night, and they introduced me to my sponsor, and they really got me into service. And as much as I didn't like it at first, it ended up being, you know, the greatest blessing in my life. And I'm so grateful for that today, because, you know, I conquered that fear of people, and I conquered, you know, a lot of, hello. A lot of the fears, you know, a lot of those fears that when I got sober, I had had my entire life. You know what I mean? I'm a fear-based person. Fear has always run me. And just to let you know, so a little bit about my story. I grew up in an extremely religious household. My parents were Christian missionaries, so I actually grew up in Africa, which was different. And I moved back over to the States when I was about 8 years old. You know, started going to school with completely different people than what I grew up with. You know what I mean? They were Americans, not Africans. And I didn't know the lingo. I didn't know the cool things to say. I was just extremely awkward, you know? And that's like this battle, like, my whole life until I started drinking was, like, just trying to be cool, trying to fit in, trying to make people like me. And I had such a hard time with it. And really, I don't think it had to do anything with my circumstances. I think it was just me. And I don't know if I really believed that I was an alcoholic before I drank, but I know that there was something definitely wrong with me. And so I remember, you know, taking my first drink was, for me, that first drink was like, it was paramount. It was one of the most incredible experiences of my life, because I remember going over to my friend Mike's house. And Mike was supposedly my best friend, but he still scared me. You know what I mean? Even though he was my best friend, I still, like, wanted his acceptance so bad and would always, like, try to be a different person in front of him. So we went over to his house, and he was like, have you ever gotten drunk before? I was like, yeah, man, all the time. And I never drank before. I was like 11 or 12 when I took my first, or when I got drunk for the first time. So he pulled out some vodka out of his dad's liquor cabinet. And granted, I used to be a small kid, man. I was like 5 foot, maybe 5'1". I weighed about 110 pounds, I was just tiny, man. So we break out this vodka, and we make two, like, big screwdrivers, half vodka, half orange juice. And he drinks about a quarter of his, and he doesn't finish it, and I just went ahead and chugged mine, because I didn't know what was going to happen, really. Like, I guess I expected to get drunk, but I didn't know what it was going to feel like. And I was like, man, I'm not drunk right now. I was like, are you going to finish yours? And he's like, no. And I was like, well, let me finish yours for you. So I finished his, and this was like 2 minutes in, okay? This is a lot of vodka. And I'm not feeling drunk yet, so I'm like, well, what should I do? He's like, you should take some more shots. So we poured about three more shots. I took them down. There was no orange juice, so it burned really bad. And then I sat down, and I stood up about a minute later. And I felt amazing. You know what I mean? I felt amazing. This feeling came over me. I didn't feel sick at all. I just felt so good. Like, my stomach was warm. And and I just started smiling. You know what I mean? And that's what alcohol does for me. And that night, nothing significant happened except, you know, we were just goofing around. We skateboarded down to this park. I kept falling off my skateboard because I was wasted. I ran through a field. My pants fell down. I peed in some guy's yard who I didn't see him. I was so like out of it. He was like yelling at me to get out of his yard, but I was like peeing in the yard. And so nothing, but it was the best night of my life. And I remember I woke up the next morning because I spent the night at his house and I was like, dude, we got to do this all the time. And he immediately, you know, had a kind of a normal mindset about it. He was like, well, that's pretty ridiculous. We're in middle school, you know? But I pretty much set out from there to try to find the people that were going to drink the way I drank. And it's not like I started drinking every day. That's impossible. But, you know, on weekends, whenever I could, I would do it. And I'm definitely an alcoholic, but I picked up some drugs along the way, and I found marijuana, and that was a good friend for a long time. And I smoked a lot of weed. And I say that because it was hard for me to get alcohol, but drug dealers don't ask for an ID. And so I was able to get drugs a lot, too. And you know, the funny thing about the drugs is that, because, you know, I went through some, like, series of arrests and stuff like that. So when I would get arrested, I would have to be on these P-tests, and I was always able to put down the drugs, but I was never able to put down the alcohol. And so through those times when I would say sober off the drugs, I would always end up getting busted for alcohol because for some reason I just wasn't able to stop. And I couldn't have explained that to you at the time except for, I would tell you that drugs are the problem and alcohol is not a big deal, you know what I mean? And that's what was my rationalization for years. Even when I went to rehab, they tried to get me to go to AA meetings at first, and I said no. I said I'm not an alcoholic. Drugs are my problem, and that definitely was not the case. And you know, the kind of person I am is an alcoholic. I'm extremely self-centered. I'm extremely selfish, and I just basically, you know, to talk a little bit about the way things were with my family, because I think that's a big part of it. Is you know, I was ruining those relationships, and because I was so selfish. And basically, if you got in the way of me and my drinking, I would cut you out. And obviously, in my extremely religious family, that played a big part because, you know, that's one of the things, when I first got caught, when I got arrested the first time, my family was devastated. You know, they couldn't believe it that I was doing that stuff. And honestly, I felt like a lot of shame about it because even though I was trying to like turn my back on God, I was trying to justify the way I was living. It was impossible for me to do that completely. I still had a conscience. I'm not someone that completely numbed myself out. I felt bad about a lot of things I did when I was drinking, and I had a lot of regrets. And I think it's a reason I hit my bottom pretty fast is because I was brought up in such a way, and I was going against it completely. So a lot of my drinking, even though it was fun and it was exciting, it was really painful at the same time because I was doing a lot of things that I just felt absolutely terrible about. But I couldn't, you know what I mean? I couldn't say no to it. And you know, a lot of that stuff was just the lifestyle that goes along with drinking. Because when you're drinking, you know, you're going to the parties so you can drink. You know what I mean? You're stealing so you can drink. And you know, and I was just a selfish person. My best friends, I would, you know, steal from them. I would lie to them about it. You know, I used to go to parties and I would, like, steal. I would basically, like, go in the girls' purses, wherever they put them down, I would take all the money. And at the end of the party, they would all be bitching about their money was gone, and I'd be like, oh my God, let me try to help you find it. Oh, I'm so sorry you lost all your money. You know, like, trying to be, like, the sensitive guy. It made no sense at all. And so, you know, just extremely selfish, and I really only cared about myself. And, you know, after, I guess, two arrests, I'd gotten in a little bit more trouble, and my parents decided they were going to send me to this rehab. And by this time, I was really depressed. When I wasn't drinking, I was suicidal. You know, I was in a lot of, I was under, like, a lot of consequences because of, like, the arrests and stuff. So people were keeping a close eye on me, making sure I wasn't messing up. So I wasn't able to get messed up as often as I could. So I would have these periods of sobriety where I just absolutely couldn't drink because people were watching me. And they were unbearable. And if you know, the way you feel sober nowadays, if you're not working a program, or maybe when you were brand new, like it was like that, but intensified. And I just couldn't bear it anymore. And I even my parents had me at a lot of psychiatrists and stuff trying to figure out why I was so depressed. And I'd always lie to them. But one day I just remember I told this guy what was up, and I told him how depressed I was. And I took this like little test, and he met with me and my mom, and he was like, "You are clinically suicidal. You have a serious problem." Like, so they started putting me on all these medications, which did nothing. But that's where I was towards the end of my drinking. When I was sober, life was unbearable. There's a part in the book where it says his problems pile up on him and become astonishingly hard to solve. It's something like that. I just paraphrased. But that's what I relate to. I would have these tiny little problems that were no big deal at all, but they would feel like the end of the world. And the only way I'd feel better about them was if I was drinking. So that's how life was. It was really unbearable. And the drinking wasn't working so much anymore. I hear people say this a lot, but some nights I would go to a party, have a couple of drinks, and I'd be, you know, really wasted. And sometimes I would go and I'd have 15, 16 shots, and I would feel sober, and my mind would still be running. And that was really tough to deal with. So I got sent off to this rehab against my will. Basically what happened was, how am I doing on time, by the way? Anyone know?
5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay. So basically, my parents tell me they want me to go to this rehab. I refuse. So one day they both show up to my school, and they're divorced at this point, so I'm wondering why they're together. And they say, we're going to take you out to lunch, and we're just going to talk to you about how you're doing. And I was like, this is very weird. What? Okay. So we get in the car, and they say we're going to this restaurant, and we're going the opposite direction. I was like, where are we going right now? They're like, Brett, we're not going to the restaurant. We're taking you to Wilderness. And I was like, you know what I mean? Like, no. No, absolutely not. I'm not going to Wilderness. I was like, stop the car right now. They didn't stop the car, so I jumped out of a moving car. And I ran back to my parents' house, and locked myself in. And after a couple hours, things had settled down a little bit. They're like, okay, we won't send you today. Let's just talk about it. Maybe we can postpone it. And a couple hours later, two big guys came and grabbed me from my house and put me in a car. So I got taken to rehab against my will. But I'll tell you, this is the funniest thing, because I was so angry. I was so angry at them. I was so angry at these escorts that came and picked me up. I was so angry at life. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I felt this relief inside, like maybe there's an end to this stuff I've been going through. You know what I mean? And it's funny how that works. And about the first 4 months I was at this place, I was writing home these letters to my parents saying how I was going to kill myself, I was going to kill them. Like, just these terrible, awful son letters, you know what I mean? Just trying to punish them as much as, or do anything possible for them to get me out. Because I knew I was going to be in this place for a while, I just didn't know how long. And the only thing that ever came of that is they would inform the school every time I'd write a terrible letter and I would get consequence. So I was just really kicking myself in the ass every time, but I kept doing it. And one day, it was right around like 4 months of being there, I almost had a spiritual experience. I don't know if that's what it was, but it felt like it, because I had a complete attitude change. And suddenly I realized how selfish I was and the way I affected people around me. And it was pretty crazy. And I felt some humility, and I felt like maybe I'm the problem, which is a big difference, you know. From there, I actually, you know, tried to be somewhat good at this place. I think the average stay is 15 months. I ended up there for 26, so obviously I wasn't that good. But I was trying, you know. And I started, I became willing to go to these meetings at the rehab, which, you know, before I was saying, I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not going to these meetings. And it started to make some sense. And there was a guy there named Al Jacobson. Some of you might know of him. He's got a good amount of time sober, and he was one of the directors there. But he really... He would come down and talk to me pretty often, and everything he said made a lot of sense. And so because of him, I started going to meetings. And for the first time in my life, I related to these people. And they were all, I mean, it was like a redneck town in the middle of Dilwyn, Virginia, which is like the geographic, there's a pole that says geographical center of Virginia, right? So this place is in the middle of nowhere, and it's like these old rednecks. But I related to what they would say, because they would talk about... how their drinking was, how when they, you know, they would take a drink and they wouldn't be able to control it, or they intended on not drinking that night, but they ended up convincing themselves to drink anyway. And that for me was always like, I just changed my mind. But when I heard them talk, I realized I wasn't changing my mind. I had no control over the drink. And like the book says, like, I lost the power of choice, which when someone said that, they made a big impact. And then they would talk about how they were when they were sober. And I related to that the most, because even though I related, their drinking was a lot more hardcore than mine. But when they talk about how when they were sober, how they just, you know, I guess how they describe in the book being restless, irritable, discontented. That those three words to me made a lot of sense because I'd always get, you know, really irritable. Irritable was the first thing that would happen. And then I'd just start wondering, when can I get this drink? And so I related to that a lot. And that was a big part that hit home with me. And I was really surprised that I related to these guys that were 60, 70 years old. But I started to want to go back to the meetings. And it became kind of the best part of rehab for me was the time off campus being at the meeting. And I really enjoyed that. And so these guys hit home with me. When you leave this rehab, like, this is not real life. Out there is real life. You need to go to meetings or you're not going to be able to make it. And I believed about half of that. And I can tell you that I knew that if I drank, it wasn't going to be good. But I didn't think, after being in rehab for 26 months, that I was ever going to be in a position where I'd want to take a drink again. Because the obsession got removed from me because I was there for so long, you know. And so I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor. And for a while, I was doing the deal. And then for another little while, I was doing about half the deal. I was going to meetings. I had a sponsor. I talked to him, but I wasn't being honest with him. I wasn't working with new guys. So I was doing some stuff, but I wasn't doing the whole thing. And half measures avail us nothing, right? So after some time, I started to get that feeling back. I started to get restless, irritable, discontented in sobriety. But I was completely unwilling to be honest with my sponsor and try to, you know, have that go away. Because at this point, I thought I was fine. I thought that it was up to me whether or not I took a drink. And AA kind of became a social club for me. So what happened was, one night I left my home group to go to this work meeting, this mandatory work meeting. And it's the same kind of deal, like the small little problem that ended up being this huge thing. I was at this work meeting, I asked this girl if she wanted to hang out after the work meeting, and she said no, and that to me felt like rejection. And I blew up. I was like, son of a bitch, no one likes me, you know what I mean? I just went into this massive, like, self-pity depression, right? And I was like, I'm taking a drink, you know what I mean? I was living with my sponsor at the time, and by this time, I was, like, pulling into the parking lot to my sober house, and I turned the car around, and I started driving to my dad's house, because I knew that he had this bottle of alcohol in his room. I drove all the way to his house. I was praying the whole way because I was so confused. It's almost like I didn't want to drink, but at this point, I was so badly in the obsession that I couldn't help it, you know? It's kind of hard to explain. But when I got there, you know, I snuck into his room, I grabbed the alcohol, and I got drunk in his basement. About 10 minutes after getting drunk, called my sponsor up and said, I can't believe I did it. I just got drunk, man. I was like, can you please come pick me up, you know? And he said, yeah. And he came and he picked me up. And I mean, the alcohol didn't work. I drank a lot of alcohol that night, and it's been a long time since I drank, but my head was still running. And all I could think about is how I just threw away all the sobriety I had and how I knew it was about to be really tough to get sober again. And it was. It was really hard, but I took my, you know what I mean? That was kind of the last little bit of, you know, my first step that really pounded it into me because, like I was saying, I was lacking on that part of really believing that I would drink again. You know, it says we're powerless over alcohol, which I think means my drinking is unpredictable. So once I drink, I don't know what's going to happen. Some nights I am able to go home. Some nights it's a shit show. And then our lives were unmanageable, which I personally think is kind of like being sober for a period of time and life becomes so unbearable that I end up having to drink again, right? And that's kind of where I was at. So I started taking my sobriety really seriously, you know, my sponsor played a huge part because I was working at Starbucks at the time, and I have to get up at like 3:45 in the morning to do the morning shift. And he didn't have school until noon, and he would wake up with me at 3:45, and he would do morning meditation with me. Then he would come into my work, he would study until he had to go to school, and then he would go to school, and then at night he would read and pray with me. And that was huge, man. And that's pretty other-centered. You know, I don't know if I could do that for somebody today. I mean, maybe I would, I don't know, but that sounds pretty unbearable. So that's what he did for me, and man, he really showed me how to do this thing, and he took me everywhere with him, and at that point, I was willing to do it. So to try to cut down some time, you know what I mean? It's been 6 years, and it hasn't been easy the whole way. You know, I'm sure if you've been sober for a while, you know that life still has its exact same problems, and it's not always easy, but it's through working the steps that I've been able to deal with the problems and have serenity through them, you know, because they say serenity is when everything is not going your way, but you can still feel all right, or some people's definition of it. And I can say that today, and it's through working these steps that I've, you know, basically gotten a faith in God that can sustain me through anything, which is pretty incredible. And that wavers, you know what I mean? I've had times in my sobriety where I haven't put in the work, and honestly, I felt close to a drink again. And the only thing that really, I think, kept me sober those times was that fear, knowing that it's not going to be good, you know? And I think that that's a pretty healthy fear of alcohol, but it definitely hasn't been easy, but it's been extremely amazing. And I've had some awesome experiences. And, you know, I don't think I'd be down here in Florida if it wasn't, you know, for my network back home and people that I really trusted and the faith in God, because, you know, I'm not one that really gets out and does the things I want to do. I'm more just like settle for the lowest you can and just try to get by in life. And this is something that I started thinking about a while ago, me and my girlfriend Paige, who's here, and we started talking about it, and it turned out to be such a great thing, and it's something that I would have been too scared to do or just too lazy to do. You know, because of the amazing people in my life who really, you know, gave me great advice, and I was able to pray on it, meditate on it, and really come to like a good decision. And I think that's pretty cool. So again, if you're new tonight, go to meetings, but please get a sponsor also, and get a sponsor who's going to take you through the steps, because without the important part of the program, which is the steps, you know, sobriety just might not mean that much to you. And I know that was the case for me. So thanks again for asking me, and thanks for letting me share.